What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and regular on the show, Jack Manuel. What's up, guys?
Am I going to steal Corey's closing phrase? Stay tuned to the end, homies.
We're the three best friends that anybody could have.
We got the three amigos on this episode right here, and we're talking Brooklyn Nets, so you already know I'm hyped. Continuing the preview series, obviously, we're up to the Atlantic Division. Quick reminder, though, you can find the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. Also, head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass and use discount code OTG5. Save yourself $5 and grab some nice OTG merch. But talking Nets today, before we talk about next season, we'll talk about last year. One of the probably bigger surprises in the NBA, 42-40, sixth seed in the Eastern Conference, lost in five to Philly in the first round. Give me one emoji that summarizes last season.
I'm going with the starstruck emoji. I mean, they're my guys. I'm starstruck by them every single night. Seeing, you know, the guys in person, seeing Joe Harris, D'Angelo Russell. They're my dudes. They're like my second family. I love everything about them. They can do no wrong. And they will do no wrong. Anyone who says anything different about the Brooklyn Nets. This is going to be a bit of a homers podcast, ladies and gents.
The emoji I used is the hard eyes emoji.
Damn, bro, you have the same emoji as me.
Damn. Well, it's funny. This is going to be a real homer pod, then, huh? even the non-Nets fan has got the same emoji as the Nets fan. So hard eye emojis. Obviously, we saw the Nets take this step forward. We saw a lot of these young guys start to blossom. And, of course, they had arguably the best NBA offseason, getting both Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving with a bunch of key role players. So it's hard eyes.
Yeah, hard eyes over here as well. You know, obviously I love this team. And I think last year was also just like a different love for that team because the expectations weren't necessarily playoffs, especially after Caris LeVert injury. But the team was resilient. You know, after that losing streak in December, they easily could have went into tank mode. They didn't. They went on a winning streak, made the playoffs, you know. If Ed Davis is healthy, maybe they have a better first-round series against Philly, too. So I think there was, like, nothing not to love about this team last year. And talking positive, what was your biggest positive takeaway from last season?
I think we're probably going to go with the form of D'Angelo Russell, solidifying himself as an all-star. Yes, it was as an injury replacement. He was the leader of the team when Caris LeVert went down with that horrific foot injury. But then when Caris LeVert came back too in his playoff run, him sort of, you know, making his statement as like, yeah, I'm the guy here in Brooklyn as well. So I think the form of those two guys is probably the biggest takeaway. And Joe Harris won the three-point contest too. So I've got to mention my boy Joey Buckets.
I think positive takeaway, I'll go with the guys that are still on the team, and the two guys in particular would be Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. Sorry to take both, because I'm sure one of those guys would have been Knicks. but Caris LeVert, obviously, a couple game winners early. The game against the Knicks sticks out in particular. We saw him burst onto the scene as a nice two-way guard. He had the unfortunate dislocation of his ankle, which could have been a lot worse, which was a saving grace. He ended up coming back. We saw his promise. Now with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, who will eventually be on this roster, Caris LeVert will be able to flourish with two bigger guys to take some of the offensive load off of him. But he's a very talented guard. And, of course, Jared Allen, we've seen him arrive as one of the better rim protectors in the NBA. Yes, needs to get a little bit stronger. Yes, needs to work on his offensive game. But rebounding and defensively, that is certainly an era that an area that Jared Allen has looked good in so far.
Yeah, I mean, you guys mentioned the injury from Caris LeVert, and I think, like, I didn't even think about it before the show and you guys mentioning it, but you could argue the biggest positive takeaway is that he didn't break his leg, and yeah, it was just a dislocation, because we saw what happened to Gordon Hayward. You know, he's not back to who he was, and he might never be back to that. Paul George has kind of bounced back and obviously was at an MVP-type level last year, but not breaking his leg was really big, and, you know, knock on wood that he stays healthy this season. But obviously, Caris LeVert, big positive takeaway. D'Lo, Jared Allen, also Spencer Dinwiddie and Joe Harris. I think the player development in general was just really important for it to continue to improve. You saw this team really improve internally. There wasn't big free agent signings, and they took a 14-win jump, which is really big for the NBA when you're not signing a superstar. So I think player development and just the overall culture of the team and just everything working for them. You saw the, you know, that payoff in this offseason. But what would be the biggest negative takeaway for the Nets last year?
Yeah, I think the negative takeaway was that mini sort of eight-game losing streak, I think it was a really sort of trying time. But at the same time, you can spin that into the fact that the Nets were able to bounce back and really sort of, you know, it sort of spurred the rest of their season to the success that they actually had. And for me, another minor negative takeaway was them on the offensive side, you know. And when you look at the offensive rating, finishing 19th for a team that, you know, plays pretty sound, systematic sort of offensive basketball, really attacks the paint, really likes to get to the line, really likes to get to the three-point line, hit those shots, emphasize those, you know, high-quality shots, to not be in the top half of the league is a little bit of a disappointment.
I think my biggest disappointment, it's hard to have a disappointment. The disappointment from last year, right? That's the disappointment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't really prepared on disappointment. I couldn't really think of a disappointment coming into this pod. I have to be honest.
I would say, like, one that I think you would, if I mentioned it, you would probably pop up in your head would be like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.
Well, yeah, I'm a low-key, I've been like a somewhat stain upon a Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Obviously, not being able to impact the game offensively outside of the paint area, never developing a jump shot has hurt him. A little bit undersized, but is more so of a four. I guess that would be a disappointment. But like the Nets had just a really good year. All these young guys popped off. They made it to the playoffs. They made some sort of noise in that first-round matchup against the 76ers. I mean, the negative may be for the fact that, you know, Caris LeVert got hurt and had to miss so much time. So what would have the Nets ceiling been if him and D'Lo got a full year of runtime next to each other? But I just really couldn't think of a solid negative when I was doing this outline.
Yeah, injuries are a really good one. I think Caris LeVert and then Dinwiddie missing a month. But I'm being really nitpicky here. But I think going to the postseason, not having a third big really hurt them. Like when Ed Davis went down in the first game in that first round series, they literally just had Jared Allen. And they were going up against Embiid and Boban, and they really just had no bodies. Like, you had Jared Dudley playing center and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at points, and, you know, that's just not going to cut it. Like I said, you know, that's nitpicking, but I think the series, obviously the Sixers are probably still going to win, but I think it could have been a better series if they had more depth at the center position.
Yeah, I think another sort of player sort of disappointments, Trevion Graham and Allen Crabbe are probably the two ones.
Yeah.
Out of the only, you know, 15-man roster that probably, you know, underperformed given their relative status. And again, injuries really plagued Allen Crabbe's season. And Trevion Graham never really found his sort of niche. You know, he had games, he had moments. But at the same time, you know, he was never really going to be. And neither of these guys, you know, Allen Crabbe ended up netting us, you know, Torian Prince, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the pod. But, you know, overall, a relatively positive season. And a little bit disappointed that Mitch Creek isn't on a two-way or isn't still on the roster. So that's a disappointment from an Australian.
Yeah, honestly, you probably, like, would forget that Allen Crabbe was on last year's roster because he played so little and the whole injury thing was almost like a mystery at different points. But talking about the Nets ranking, they're coming in at number 12 in the OTG Power Rankings. What do you think about them being here? Too high, too low, fair?
I'm really happy with this ranking. I think it's pretty much on the money. I think some pundits might have the Nets a little bit lower than some other teams, but I think that this is pretty fair in respect to the rest of the rankings that we actually have here. You know, they're around the range that we've sort of talked about before. Celtics, Pacers, Raptors, I'm pretty happy with it. They could take a jump if Kyrie Irving is going to lead this team and Caris LeVert's going to become a stud and Torian Prince becomes an actual defender. But then they could also, you know, drop a few spots if they, you know, suffer some injuries. And, you know, Kyrie and Caris haven't necessarily had the most healthiest of careers. So there is some range here for the Nets, but I think that 12 is a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I think 12 is fair. I said fair is 12 almost. I think 12 is fair. I think they could be a couple spots higher. Arguably, but of course, without Durant being healthy for majority of this season, maybe not all of this season, I know that's why the rankings had them dipped. But this, again, this is a very deep team. Kyrie will be there. Caris LeVert will be there in particular. I think 12 is fair to start.
Yeah, I think 12 is fair to start. And I would have probably made an argument in the past to boost them up a couple spots. But now with, you know, the unsureness of Rodion Skurutz and Wilson Chandler, I think that kind of hurts the ranking because obviously Chandler's going to miss 25 games. Don't know if he's going to be on the teams. And the whole Rodion situation, we really have no idea if we'll ever put on a Nets jersey again, depending on how that goes. So I think there's a lot of this could really fluctuate during the season. They have potential to jump a couple spots, but like Jack mentioned, there could be a couple drops too. But let's talk offseason. And like Corey mentioned earlier, this was one of the biggest offseasons in the NBA. We'll start with the draft picks. Nick Claxton at 31 and Jalen Hands at 56. Thoughts on these two?
Yeah, I really like Nick Claxton. He gives me, you know, if we're doing NBA comps, I've done some video breakdowns of him, and he gives me some Chris Bosh sort of vibes. You know, when he was in college, he ran the floor really well. You know, he provides a different sort of area to the bigs that we have on the roster. Yes, you know, he's a really nice defender like a Jared Allen, but he's a little bit more lateral, a little bit more versatile in terms of his athleticism. He's a really good one-on-one defender. He also, in a similarity, he has a very sort of spindly sort of frame to Jared Allen. But he also has some really nice pop and athleticism and really nice jump about him. You know, he can really run the floor like a point guard almost at times. I really like the pickup. In terms of, you know, just looking at his skill set, looking at some of his highlights over the ways, even some of his summer league form, he looks to be a pretty decent player. And, you know, he might see some time. I think he'll spend a lot of time at the G League. But if we see some injuries and, you know, maybe he's putting on some weight and, you know, he's spending some time with the training staff, he could see some time in the Brooklyn Nets roster as well.
You being high on Claxton is good. I was impressed by his highlight reel. That's about all I got for you. I'm not going to be a draft guy. I'm not going to fake it.
Yeah, at least he's honest. That's what, you know, I think the listeners appreciate. I think Claxton, though, is a guy that really has a lot of potential. Like, we're talking about a possible all-star in the future. A lot of development would have to happen. There's also the possibility of a bust here. But like Jack mentioned, you know, the versatility as a defender, that switchability is really big. And then just the frame and the skill set and what he did at Georgia running the offense, just having so many skills, like just not fully polished, but having them there just gives him a lot of potential. And Jalen Hands is a guy that I'm not really sure if he's going to be with the Nets. He obviously hasn't signed a contract. There's a better chance of him kind of playing internationally and the Nets retaining his rights. But
one thing on Jalen Hands, yep, is he's going to be immortalized by the moment when, and it shows his character, and I like him as a player, and I hope that he finds some success wherever he is, and maybe gets one of the Nets two-way spots that haven't been announced yet. But the moment where the player is disappointed, walking down the court in college, his head's down, and the player comes over and lifts his head up, that was Jalen Hands, and that was one of the coolest things. I want to, like, you know, show your kids that. You show, like, you know, as a teacher, I show my kids that, you know, about sportsmanship, about, you know, maintaining your composure and confidence. He's going to be immortalized as just like a really sort of positive sort of thing. So just shout out to Jalen Hands for that.
Yeah, and that video obviously goes viral. I'm sure we'll see it again during the college season.
Yep.
But talking free agency signing and trades, you know, the Nets brought in a lot of names, two of the biggest names, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, DeAndre Jordan, Torian Prince, David Nwaba, Wilson Chandler, Garrett Temple, and also re-signed Theo Pinson and Henry Ellison as a two-way contract. First, let's talk Kyrie and KD. Obviously, this was a big splash landing these two. This was like the big prize for anybody in free agency until, you know, Kawhi and Paul George popped up. But I remember Corey and I did a podcast, I believe either Friday or Saturday night before free agency had started, and we had picked the Nets to be the favorite to land KD. But throughout like that last or that month prior to free agency starting, did you guys feel like the Nets were going to land KD and Kyrie, or was it kind of just like a surprise that happened at the last minute?
I was almost an anti-KD because I love him, but I was anti on him landing on the Nets because I was pretty solidified on the Knicks sort of route. And, you know, Nick and I have had a couple of arguments on the buzz about that. So, yeah, I was incredibly surprised about it. I think, like, you remember a lot of moments throughout free agency history and they sort of stick with you. So, like, it was 6 a.m., 7 a.m. here in Melbourne. I'd woken up, you know, a little bit earlier than normal because, you know, free agency was happening. And, you know, I was in the DMs and in Twitter with you guys, and I sort of saw a drop, and I'm like, okay, I need to get my laptop out and let's just sit down and break this thing down. It was a really surprising moment. It sort of gave the validation to the franchise that we'd been building with Sean Marks and Coach Kenny for the last three seasons. And for Kevin Durant to sort of, as he said in the Wall Street sort of journal piece, you know, not even need to sort of see anything and just go, look, I know this team. They give me a bit of love when I head there. I want to play with my best friend. It really gives validation to the Brooklyn Nets as a franchise. And it shows that, you know, you can build the right way and you don't have to have the cachet of an LA market or, you know, a blue and orange and, you know, the mecca of basketball at MSG. It's probably one of the biggest moments in Brooklyn Nets history since they moved to Brooklyn, if not the biggest.
I mean, it felt like he was going to go to New York, right? Relatively early on. And we were all waiting for the domino to fall. You mentioned, Nick, that I predicted Brooklyn. Cause it just felt like Brooklyn. We knew that he had his new business operation starting up in New York City as well. And you started just connecting the dots. Then, of course, I think right around the same time, you started seeing, like, Kyrie Irving was in Brooklyn looking for or looking at apartments. So the dots were all out there, and you just had to connect them. You know, I don't think when it looks at the other teams that could have landed Kevin Durant, now looking back, like, I don't feel like any team really had a chance. It felt like Brooklyn was just naked, like, head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah, it really did. I think you look at it in, like, hindsight, you're like, okay, it either made sense to be the Nets or the Warriors because of the Nets situation, the role players they could put around him. And obviously the Clippers would have been great, but they were more Kawhi-focused. And if he went to the Knicks and Kyrie wasn't going to go with him, it was like, who was going to go with him? And then Kemba got snatched up fast, and everybody kind of just found a home really fast. And as soon as, like, you kind of saw the Kyrie thing come, where it was like, all right, Kyrie's going to Brooklyn, now you're like, okay, now it's getting more positive for KD as a possibility here. And even though I had picked it, I still remember, like Jack said, this is arguably one of the biggest moments in Nets history in general. Like, you just signed one of the best players of NBA history. You know, we don't know what he's going to be like when he comes back, but there's a good chance he'll still be a really, really good player. And I was doing something, and I just completely dropped what I was doing, headed to the laptop. I think I DM'd you and Jack. And I was like, all right, you guys want a pod? And Corey's like, all right, you guys take this first. You guys got to do a buzz. And we were just hyped. I mean, I was hyped. I'm still hyped about it. And I'll be even more hyped as soon as I see KD in a Nets jersey. But what does this mean?
I just want to say one more note. I just want to say, when I think about last season, I think about Kyrie and Kevin Durant now on the Nets. I think back to that All-Star game tunnel where Kyrie is clearly saying something about two to Kevin Durant.
And the max slots.
Right, exactly.
If I had if I was at Media Day, that would be the question I would ask.
What did you guys talk about? What is this moment about right now? Because I have no doubt in my mind it was Durant. We can get two max slots there, bro. They got two spots, you, me.
And the interesting thing is, like, I wonder, obviously we know that players and agents talk to teams before free agency starts. I wonder if the Nets had rumblings very early on because, you know, you don't pull the move for Allen Crabbe unless you have an idea that you're going to use those two max slots. So I think
we heard Bobby Portis as well saying, like, sorry to jump in, that, like, they knew, like, the players around the league knew from, like, February. And February is All-Star break. Spencer Dinwiddie was, you know, chatting to Kyrie Irving, you know, when they were hanging out at Harvard, and, you know, it was almost known that Kyrie didn't want to be in Boston anymore in December. So it's almost like, you know, if you were, you know, just on the daily beat, or you were just on the grind and you had, you know, the connections with the players, you were in those WhatsApp group chats or whatever, you know, it was almost fait accompli. And I you know, for me, it just wasn't. And I'm always just going to be a skeptic until it's, you know, fully solidified. But, you know, it changes the trajectory of the NBA. And I think a lot of people are anti this move, especially just general NBA media pundits, just because it's like, well, why is it like these two weird dudes hanging out together? Or, like, the Nets are going to have to wait 1 year. And it's just like, okay, let's just, given the context, it's like what other people wanted him to go to New York and sort of solidify himself as an individual superstar, sort of bring, you know, some cachet back to the Mecca. I get, you know, people's reservations or whatever, but, you know, we see and hear the reasoning behind it for Kevin Durant, and you cannot doubt why he wants to do it. You know, you cannot take away his agency as, you know, a person and as a man to just want to continue and build his own brand and narrative in New York and in Brooklyn. To me, anyone who continues to sort of be a naysayer throughout it is just hating for the sake of hating. It seems a little bit silly to me and a little bit childish.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't like to be wrong too, Jack, so that probably plays a part in it too. But what do you think this means for the Nets? You know, Jack, you kind of hinted at it, and we've talked about it being one of the biggest moments in Nets, you know, franchise history. For them as an organization, getting two of the best players in the NBA, arguably two top 10 guys, and we've talked about this in the past, not just on the court, but off the court, these are two of the biggest names in the NBA.
They are if we're talking about the most marketable superstars, they're two of the three most marketable superstars. I'm going LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, Kyrie Irving. So maybe two of the four, sorry. It's insane. You know, if you had two of the most marketable superstars in the league, the ownership in Joseph Tsai would absolutely be just cashing in their checks, especially, you know, with the Asian market that they have over there and the connections that they're going to have there. Being in New York, one of the biggest media markets in the world. And I think that it just provides relevance, like I sort of said, and provides, you know, a new level of status for the franchise as a whole. You know, the popularity of the social media surrounding the Brooklyn Nets have been exploding. You know, I'm on a Facebook a little bit more and just looking at the Brooklyn Nets page this year, you know, you're seeing thousands of likes on posts compared to, you know, a few hundred compared when there's like D'Angelo Russell or Caris LeVert posts. That's what happens when you have Caris LeVert, when you have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. You know, the popularity of the Brooklyn Buzz has maintained consistency. We're charting in all these really weird places around the world because, you know, people want to hear about the Brooklyn Nets because they have two of the most popular individual superstars when it comes to branding, when it comes to on-court and off-court play as personalities. It speaks volumes, and I think that we could do an entire podcast just speaking about the gravity that these two bring to any franchise, let alone the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, and you want to hear more about that, you could head to the Brooklyn Buzz. Jack and I have dove into these topics pretty deep, but what would be your favorite signing for the Nets other than Kyrie and KD?
I'm going Taurean Prince. I think in terms of how he fits in a Coach Kenny offensive and defensive system is almost perfect. I've done a defensive breakdown of his, and I think he has all of the tools to put it all together, and I just think he needs to show more consistency, willingness, and engagement. I think, you know, Kenny hopefully can get on him a little bit on that end of the floor and sort of go, look, we know you can do these things offensively. We want you to focus on the defensive side. You know, I think he's got some real potential on that side of the floor. And I think, you know, he's going to be given every opportunity until Kevin Durant comes back to really prove it. You know, he's one of the better three-point shooters as well. So I think he just fits in schematically so perfectly. And in terms of he's almost just like a straight swap for an Allen Crabb, you know, I think he should start. And especially, you know, with the Rodions Kuritz and Wilson Chandler sort of drama that's happening, you know, he's even more important to the Brooklyn Nets roster right now.
Yeah, Taurean Prince is definitely a good answer for the fact that they're going to need that depth, that wing, and even the small ball four, which he has shown potential to play with the Atlanta Hawks, a guy I'm pretty high on. I would like to say, you know, Caris LeVert being extended for this, but that isn't really an option. And I'm not going to go with Jack Ryan full on, save Taurean Prince. So I'm going to say DeAndre Jordan for the fact of he's going to help keep Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant happy at this point. It looks like he was a big voice and for both of those guys, obviously a good locker room guy, a veteran. I'm worried that he's going to take too much play time away from Jared Allen, who I would lean towards more heavily. But until Jared Allen can either win that spot or prove that it is his spot to have, I think DeAndre Jordan, although it might be a little bit too much money as well, is a good signing for not just the on-the-court stuff, but the intangibles he'll bring to that locker room.
Yeah, both great picks. I think DeAndre, you look at, you know, like you mentioned, Corey, being there with Kyrie and KD, and I think that'll help him on the court too, having a relationship with those guys, and they'll get the best out of him. You know, he wasn't necessarily super motivated last year in Dallas and New York, so I think that could change. But like Jack mentioned, I really love the Taurean Prince fit. And it's almost like they swapped out Allen Crabb for him, and I think people don't, like, think Taurean Prince really good shooter, but he's a really good catch-and-shoot guy, and you're going to put out lineups with Joe Harris and Taurean Prince, and that's just going to give a ton of spacing to guys like Kyrie Irving, Caris LeVert, and Spencer Dinwiddie. So I'm excited for that, and I think the Nets will be able to get something out of his defensive potential. I guess a low-key guy, though, I really like too would be Garrett Temple. He just seems to have a really good reputation around the league and just doing the small things, and I really liked his thoughts on the podcast he was recently on. But talking departures, now excluding D'Angelo Russell because he was using the Kevin Durant sign-and-trade, which Net do you wish they retained? I'll just list them all real quick, Jack. Carroll, Jared Dudley, Ed Davis, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Alan Williams, Allen Crabb, Trevion Graham, and Shabazz Napier.
I mean, out of those guys, there's a lot. I think that, you know, we loved Ed Davis so much, Nick, in terms of would we rather have Ed Davis and DeAndre Jordan on the roster right now? Yeah, probably, just because of, you know, I think he knows his role, and I think it doesn't necessarily affect the sort of chemistry going forward. But I'm going to be a Jared Dudley stan and stand for my dude, Jared Dudley. What he proved in the playoffs and the postseason against Ben Simmons and bringing the cachet to the Brooklyn Nets and, you know, sort of this budding rivalry and the leadership that he provided and the wisdom he provided as a leader in that locker room, I think he was invaluable on and off the court, especially off the court. You know, I think that D'Angelo Russell doesn't have the season that he did without, you know, Jared Dudley. And then I will also say this, probably the same thing about Damari Carroll. Both of those guys challenged D'Angelo in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, they're going to have great seasons. There's going to be plenty of minutes for Jared Dudley in Los Angeles. And I think Damari Carroll, you know, he just fits so well. As a lot of wing guys who can shoot the three and play some defense on the San Antonio Spurs. It's sad to see him go. But like you mentioned, it, Garrett Temple is a nice sort of replacement. But would have been nice to keep one of those sort of guys.
I think you only miss D'Angelo if things go bad. So you don't miss D'Angelo necessarily. I think Jared Dudley, for locker room purposes, you would miss to a degree. I think Damari Carroll, for the on the court and off the court stuff, you probably miss the most. You know, him being there for several years, him actually kind of bringing his career out of what was looking like he could have been out of the league in a short time before he got to Brooklyn, with how things ended in Toronto, really got back on track with Kenny Atkinson and company. So I think Damari Carroll is probably the guy you miss the most. But, I mean, you filled that role with, well, Wilson Chandler was supposed to be part of that fix to that role, Taurean Prince as well, and Garrett Temple. I think Carroll's the guy you probably missed the most.
Yeah, I think it's definitely between Damari and Jared for me. You know, I love Ed Davis, but I think, you know, the DeAndre swap isn't too crazy. It's not like you're losing a lot. You know, obviously Ed Davis knew his role, one of the best rebounders in the league. But now with the news with Rodions and Wilson Chandler, you probably wish that you were able to keep Damari or Jared Dudley. You know, Damari got paid a little bit more than you could afford. So Jared Dudley would probably be the guy in the situation, and also just a great guy to have in the locker room to maintain the personalities. But obviously you can't complain about the offseason because so many big names were signed. But talking next year, what would be the biggest team X factor? And it can't be a specific player or health.
I've gone sort of a bit outside the realm for this one, Nick, and we've sort of touched on it a little bit, but I'm going with the fan base in the city.
Interesting. I think we've had some really good ones, but every show, Corey, it's like we're getting something different that we didn't think about.
I mean, when you guys sent me the outline, I'm like, this isn't what was on last year's one. So I was just like, oh, okay, I got to think a little bit deeper about this. So, I mean, I've spoken about the city as a whole and you know, the Brooklyn Nets sort of being now the more successful team for the, you know, recent sort of couple of decades. And now they have the cachet of having the superstars. But now, you know, this has to draw in the fan base. You know, the casual fans are going to be drawn in now. Are they going to want to go to see Kyrie Irving over Dennis Smith Jr. and Emmanuel Mudiay and these sort of guys? Yeah, probably. I think that, you know, there's a Chick-fil-A now opening apparently down on Atlantic Avenue. So I think the fan base is going to only increase. And, you know, I think that it's probably one of the number one things whenever you're having an argument with a Knicks guy on Twitter or a non-Nets fan on Twitter. It's just like, oh, well, yeah, you guys have the lowest attendance. And then it's just like, well, it's all relative, you know, if you know the capacity of Barclays Center, blah, 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 blah. So I think that the fan base and just the general sort of vibe that that can bring and hopefully grow for the franchise going forward, I think is going to be an X factor in terms of, you know, Kyrie Irving just sells seats. You know, superstars sell seats in this league. And whenever Kyrie is healthy, we're probably going to have a relatively full house. And yes, D'Angelo Russell built himself to have that cachet throughout the season, but Kyrie's had it since, you know, he was a rookie. He is, like we've sort of spoken about, one of the most marketable guys. And when you're talking about marketability, that sells merch, that sells tickets, you know, it sells everything. It brings in, you know, tourist fans, it brings in new fans. It solidifies old fans and makes them buy season tickets. So for me, it's the fan base and the city as sort of like a collective sort of topic and sort of factor for me.
My X factor is, I think, pretty mundane, but it's chemistry. A lot of new pieces, a lot of new faces coming into Brooklyn. Yes, you still have the somewhat core nucleus of Jared Allen, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, and Joe Harris. But you have a lot of new faces, and a lot of big egos coming in with, well, not egos, but a lot of big star power in Kyrie and Kevin Durant. Obviously, Durant, you're not focusing on too much this first year, but whether he comes back at the end of the year or next year, that's going to play a factor. And how do guys gel with Kyrie? We saw Kyrie struggle with younger guys in Boston last year. We saw that become very turbulent and chaotic. So for me, it's chemistry.
Both great. You know, obviously the fan base thing, Jack and I know, being on Nets Twitter, it's always an argument about that. And then chemistry is huge. Anytime you just, you know, it's almost a completely new team other than the guys you mentioned, Corey. So it's going to be about these guys gelling quickly. They do have an early trip, an international trip in preseason, so that should possibly help. We know Kyrie spent a lot of time with Caris LeVert this summer, already had a relationship with Spencer Dinwiddie. So hopefully they start to gel really well early on. But for me, I'm looking at the forward spot. not as much maybe the small forward, but that stretch four, that small ball four. You know, is Torian Prince going to step up? If Rodion isn't with the team and Wilson Chandler's suspended, what are they going to do at that position? Are they going to sign Carmelo Anthony? How are they going to deal with this? Is Nick Claxton going to end up getting minutes? Like, there's so many variables that forward spot. They're set at the guards. You know, they have Kyrie, they have Caris LeVert, they have Dinwiddie, they have Joe Harris. They're set at center with Jared Allen and DeAndre. It's really about the forward spots. And if the forwards are good, this is what's going to kind of make or break this team. It could be the difference between being a top four seed or being, you know, a six seed. But what would you guys have as the opening night starting lineup?
Kyrie Irving, Joe Harris, Caris LeVert, Torian Prince, DeAndre Jordan.
Likewise.
Yeah, this one, honestly, it's kind of tough. Like, I think this is, that's pretty close to being locked in. But the only guys that I feel really, really confident about starting are Kyrie, LeVert, and I would say Torian Prince at this point. And Joe Harris is pretty likely, especially obviously having success with Team USA and giving them another floor spacer. And the center position, I think, is going to be a battle at training camp. DeAndre obviously is the vet. He's going to give them more of a big body down there, which they might need, especially if they're going with a smaller lineup. So I like DeAndre right now, but I wouldn't be surprised if Jared Allen were to start.
Yeah, I think that by the, you know, All-Star break, I'm hoping Jared Allen has taken that position. Or maybe it's just, you know, sort of center by committee. And Kenny Atkinson's like, look, no one, neither of you guys is going to have this spot locked down until you prove otherwise. And until then, we're going to play via matchup. And for the most part, you know, as a starter, you know, it's going to be DeAndre Jordan because he has the sort of physical acumen that Jared Allen lacks in, that you want at the center position to go against those big boys. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, which one is closing? I think closing lineups these days are supersede anything that, you know, a starting lineup, because, you know, yes, it looks good on paper and, you know, you see it in the tweets and whatever on social media, but I would much rather care if I'm out there and, you know, the dying moments of a really close game.
Yeah, and I think that's what really matters. Like, I think DeAndre Jordan might end up getting the start, but he's not going to necessarily play starter minutes, where Jared Allen will see the bigger minute load, but DeAndre will just kind of get the respect of, you know, starting in the first and third quarter. And I think Jared Allen would be almost more likely to close games just because he's a little bit more versatile in terms of, like, small ball lineups and the ability to switch a little bit better than DeAndre at this point in his career.
Yeah, I think he's got way more sort of acumen in terms of, you know, he can move a little bit. You know, I think we may have overrated some of his, like, lateral athleticism. I think he's still good there. I don't think he's elite in that area. But DeAndre Jordan is, you know, subpar and then some. So in terms of how you want to fit schematically, you know, I think the preseason and training camps, you know, when the media days, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, all the rumblings that come out from there. And it's going to be a fight. And, you know, Jared Allen said he wants to play the four as well, do whatever. Not happening. But, you know, it'll be one thing to certainly watch going forward, because that center position is always crucial in terms of just, like, really locking down and sort of providing stability for the rest of the lineup.
Who else do you think has the possibility of being in the starting lineup if you were to swap somebody out? Let's say if Rodions is, you know, not in trouble and it turns out these allegations are not correct, I could see him possibly being a starter. Do you think anybody else on the team has a chance to start?
Well, on 2K, the starting lineup is, instead of Torian Prince, it's Wilson Chandler. And, you know, so Wilson Chandler starts, I mean, he starts alongside Kevin Durant, but, like, you know, Wilson Chandler starts, and he starts over Torian Prince.
That's too bad, though. I'm not putting any
I'm having a good season with them in 2K, so, like, I'm keeping that starting lineup. It's working well so far. But, yeah, I think Rodion's Kurtz makes the most sense. And when, you know, I've talked about this and had discussions on Twitter, you know, earlier, a lot of fans were in my mentions about the fact that, you know, Torian Prince he lacks the size to be, you know, a small ball four. And, yes, Rodion's Kurtz has height, but I think his frame is much more less developed than Torian Prince is. I think Spencer Dinwiddie is a starting caliber player, but I think his role just fits so perfectly with this second unit. So he might. It's similar with, like, Lou Williams. These guys are bona fide stars, and, you know, would start on 98% of the other teams, but it just fits well for their role as backups.
Corey, anybody else you could see starting?
Spencer was the one guy that immediately popped in my head, but for what Jack just said, you want probably that ball handler off the bench. And also, just to make Kyrie happy, maybe you don't want somebody who also needs the ball in their hands and make plays for others. Maybe Kyrie will do better if he just has to try and run the show himself.
Yeah, I think Spence, just his role as a six man is just ideal. Like, he'll probably be in a good chunk of closing lineups, but I think a lineup that I'd really like to see, if you know the whole Rodions thing, you know, whatever happens with that, would be a Kyrie, LeVert, Torian Prince, Rodions, and Jared Allen, because that would just be such a fun, fast lineup. It would have a lot of speed, especially in transition. I think that's incredibly important. But moving on from there, who's your player to watch for next season?
We haven't spoken enough about him, so I have to speak about him. It's Joe Harris. I'm really intrigued to see how the Team USA experience, you know, affects Joe Harris, positively, negatively, one way or another, heading into the 2019-20 season. You know, I think he had a really average, you know, playoff series. You know, he had some shots that he should have hit and he would normally hit. But this sort of experience, and yes, the Team USA has been a disaster, you know, at FIBA, but I think what you can gain from it as an individual and being around sort of guys and learning things from the likes of, you know, Greg Popovich, I think are going to impact positively on a guy like Joe Harris. You know, just being around that high quality and being in, you know, big games and games that matter, as Bill Simmons likes to say, on the international stage, should have a positive effect, even though Joe Harris was almost like the token whipping boy of FIBA. He's like, oh, he's just the guy that's there because, you know, he can shoot threes. I'm really intrigued to see what Joe Harris can bring. You can say a lot of guys here, but we don't speak enough about Joe Harris. I mean, I do, but the NBA media doesn't. So my boy Joe Buckets, I'm really intrigued to see what he can bring. And if he can maintain his level of efficiency from the perimeter, and if he can add anything as well, or, you know, even if he just maintains the season that he had from last year, I'd be bloody happy.
Yeah, so I'm going with Caris LeVert, a guy in our OTG top 50 players power rankings that me and Jack have developed and done over the past month or so that we are releasing now. So slight plug, but it's Caris LeVert for me. We saw, as we mentioned earlier on this pod, a guy who was bursting onto the scene before he got hurt, came back and had some very nice moments in the playoffs. And going forward, maybe not this year, but when Kevin Durant's back, Caris LeVert will be an important, crucial element to where whether or not this team is really viable and pushing for an NBA championship. Obviously, they're going to have the talent with Kevin Durant healthy to be already competing for a title, but to be true and maybe even number one contenders, if Caris LeVert can raise his game to all-star level alongside those two stars already, then the Brooklyn Nets has something extremely special.
Yeah, I wouldn't be myself. I didn't pick Caris LeVert here. Like Corey mentioned, he could be arguably the biggest piece for the Nets being, you know, just a contender or actually, you know, possibly like a dynasty. If you look at it, having three stars and the other piece on the roster taking a possible jump, Caris really has that two-way ability to be that kind of do-it-all guy next to a guy like Kyrie and KD. But it, just to switch it up, I'll do Torian Prince in there too. Like Jack had kind of pointed out earlier, if he can get his defense to a high level, we saw really good flashes his rookie season. We know he's a really good three-point shooter. Things just didn't work out well in Atlanta. I think in the net system, he could probably really take that next step forward. But what would be worst-case scenario for the Nets next year?
I mean, worst-case scenario is, you know, Corey touched on the aspect of the chemistry is that the chemistry just doesn't work. You know, Kyrie brings some of his, you know, negativity to the Brooklyn Nets roster and culture. Things just don't mesh. There's turmoil within the locker room. I don't necessarily see it happening, but it's a worst-case scenario. And, you know, that all culminates in the Nets missing the playoffs. You know, there's some other teams around them that could take a jump, you know, Bulls, Hawks, and things just fall apart. You know, this is discounting any sort of injuries happening, but I think that that's sort of the worst case scenario that we sort of all know about, all hear about, and has been done to death by people outside the Brooklyn Nets, and already think that they're barely a playoff contender. And there's, you know, it for me, you know, I think that their range is a little bit better than, you know, missing the playoffs, but just because of, you know, what they've done in terms of when we spoke about the additions and what they lost. But yeah, that's their worst case scenario. I think that they miss out on the playoffs and they take a minor backward step or they don't take any improvement at all.
Worst case scenario is exactly that. Guys don't take a jump forward. Maybe this, sorry guys, to put this in the air and atmosphere. Maybe Caris LeVert has peaked. Maybe Jared Allen has peaked. Maybe chemistry doesn't work out and things start to fall apart. And we see, you know, Kyrie start to disassociate with this team. And
my word, Corey.
And it's over before it's even begun. That's worst case scenario. I got to give the worst case scenario. Kyrie is, I'm not going to say that comparison.
I think worst case is probably even the 8 seed for me. Like, I even if Kyrie doesn't gel and you know things don't work out well, there's still a lot of talent on this roster. And if a guy even went down for a month, I think they're able to respond to it. And then obviously, you know, the chemistry was bad. I think the lack of forwards would hurt, but there's just plenty on the team, and the East still really isn't that great. Like, the teams they're competing with in that area just aren't anything where you're like, oh God, like they're a lock for the playoffs. There's still a lot of question marks pretty much after the top five teams in the East, with all the changes and all the young talent you kind of expect from them. So I think worst case for me would be an 8 seed. What's best case?
Best case scenario is what I wrote for the OGT Basketball Hot Take Marathon, is the 3rd seed. The 3rd seed, Kyrie Irving is an MVP contender. Another article I wrote for the Hot Take Marathon. Corey's plugging, I'm going to plug too. So I think that, you know, they elevate themselves. Kyrie drags his team. He proves all the naysayers wrong. He, you know, he had a great regular season, but like, he leads this team into, you know, a nice little postseason run, you know, 50 win game season, and some success in the postseason too. And, you know, they overtake and they prove everyone around them wrong. You know, it's not the Boston Celtics, it's not the Toronto Raptors, it's not the Indiana Pacers, but it's the Brooklyn Nets that finish with that 3rd seed. And, you know, I could see it happening. I think that if we're talking about what's more likely to happen, a best case or a worst case, I'm more confident about a best case scenario happening than a worst case scenario, just because, oh no, it's probably the optimism and the fandom in me, and it's probably a little bit biased, but I think that that seems more likely than the worst case, even though we have seen the worst case sort of happen in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue worst case for the Nets last year was Caris LeVert going down when he did, and they still were able to bounce back. And this is a different side of you, Jack. I'm used to the pessimistic Jack.
Well, but we literally had to, it's best case scenario next. So, like, I have to say, I can't say, oh, they're going to finish with the 5th seed.
Well, you said it's more likely the best case is going to happen than the worst case. I didn't expect you to say that. But what would be your season outcome for the best case, though, like, in terms of playoffs?
You know, I think a playoff series win. I think that that's a step forward. I don't see us making a ridiculous amount of noise unless Kevin Durant is back, and that totally changes the trajectory and projections of the team overall. But, you know, if we're projecting with Kevin Durant fully healthy, then it's, you know, maybe a championship. That's incredibly lofty and incredibly best case scenario. Again, I don't necessarily see that happening, but with Kyrie Irving, with the roster as is right now, and yes, there are some weaknesses, and again, I'm worried about that forward position too, Nick. But right now, as is, I think the Nets, you know, are a decent enough team in the postseason where, you know, Kyrie Irving can lead us, you know, alongside Caris LeVert and some other guys and Spencer Dinwiddie to some success. You know, we get a decent enough matchup. We don't have to verse, you know, a team that, you know, we have the monkey on our backs or whatever. I think that the Nets can win a playoff series. But again, you know, we are months and months and months away from that. We haven't even begun the big stuff yet.
Best case for you, Corey.
My best case scenario would be the Nets making it to, I mean, this is best case scenario. So the Eastern Conference Finals. And we've seen this happen before to a lesser extent. We saw the Boston Celtics with a relatively young core without Kyrie Irving make it to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple years ago. Granted, maybe the East is a little bit more talented, or maybe the talent is more dispersed than that year in particular. But I think there's enough young talent here where if the right guys pop off and Caris LeVert, Joe Harris maybe takes a step, Jared Allen, you have Kyrie in the best shape or in the best mental form of his life where he's not causing issues off the court, then the Nets could go on a run and, depending on matchups, possibly sneak their way into an Eastern Conference Finals.
Yeah, I think that's best case as well. I think, you know, if somehow they were able to not match up with Philly or Milwaukee in the second round, there's a really good chance they could get to the Eastern Conference Finals if guys take that next step, or if one of those two teams I just mentioned had a big injury. And then obviously another best case, which Jack kind of hinted at, and I think is a real possibility, is Kevin Durant returning this year. The real question would be, how healthy is he? If he's fully healthy, or he's able to get back close to his form at 85% and play that four position for the Nets, they could definitely make the NBA Finals if, you know, everybody else kind of worked out. But that's a best case scenario, and obviously we hope it happens. But what's your actual prediction for the season, and where do they finish in the division?
I'm going to go 46-36 and a 5th seed or a 4th seed, whatever that lands them.
Yeah, I have the...
And wait, oh, sorry, Kari. Jack, where do they finish in division, though?
3rd.
I have them finishing 3rd in the division as well, and I have the Nets getting 47 wins on the year.
All right, I'm definitely going to be optimistic here. I'm going with 50 wins, 2nd in the division, and I think Kevin Durant is going to come back. I don't know if he'll be 100% when he comes back, but I think we'll see KD play in a Brooklyn Nets uniform this year.
Excuse me, I actually have to make a correction. I have the Nets second in the division with 47 wins.
That's what I like to hear. All right, you're back on my good side. What's your playoff outcome? I personally have them winning the first round series. I think they're going to be able to beat, you know, if they get a top four seed, they should be able to beat one of the lower four seeds. What do you guys think are going to happen in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think that too. I think that despite, you know, Kyrie Irving's lackluster postseason against the Boston Celtics, you know, you generally go, when it comes to the playoffs, you know, talent matters more than anything. And, you know, coming up against an Orlando Magic team, a Chicago Bulls team, or whatever those sort of lower rung teams around there, the Miami Heat. Miami Heat might be a little bit trickier just because of, you know, Jimmy Butler, I think, is a pretty proven postseason performer. So they're a sort of team, a dark horse team that I would want to avoid in the postseason. You know, if they were to finish like, you know, fifth, sixth, or seventh, I would try to avoid them. But yeah, teams like the Magic, teams like the Hawks, teams like the Bulls, I think that the Nets can win a series. That's probably, for me, as optimistic and as I can get, you know, without Kevin Durant on this team and projecting that.
What do you got playoff-wise, Corey?
I have them making the playoffs, of course, obviously with 47 wins, and I have them as a second-round exit. I think in most first-round matchups, this team should win. And in the second round, of course, it feels like they're going to get matched up with either Milwaukee or Philly, and I don't love those matchups.
Yeah, the only way they beat Milwaukee or Philly is if KD's back healthy or there's some type of injury. So I think a first-round series win is really likely here. But any other questions or thoughts you guys want to get in before we talk League Pass?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of everything surrounding the Brooklyn Nets heading into next season, it's almost like there is now expectation on this team. And when there is expectation, you know, what do the players, what does the roster, what does the organization as a whole, how do they respond to that? And I'm really intrigued to sort of see because, you know, we've been the sort of darling team of league pass and Twitter. It's just like, oh, the come up team, the 2018-19 season is going to go down as one of the sort of fairy tale seasons for the franchise as a whole. But now there is expectations. Now there are players that, you know, have real superstar talent. You know, players are expected to take jumps. Players have been paid. You know, now that all these things are starting to happen, how do you respond as a franchise? How do you respond as a player? How do you gel? How do you reach those lofty goals of playoff series wins? Because it's not easy to do those things. It's hard enough in a real grind of an 82-game season to get there, let alone win a series against some really talented competition. So for me, the response to the expectation that is now on this franchise is going to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. A lot more pressure, expectations. It even feels like there's just a lot more hate. Like you mentioned, you know, the Nets were really popular on NBA Twitter last year. Now it seems like a lot of people already dislike them just because they signed Kyrie and KD. But any thoughts from you, Corey?
There's a new team in New York. And I think we're going to start to see that more and more this season. Obviously, whenever a team gets new stars, they become villains. That's just how fans work when you see star talent all coming together on one team. Your natural instinct is to go against it and to hate it. I mean, the Miami Heat big three, the Golden State Warriors, for example, it's just generally the consensus you get. But I'm happy that the Brooklyn Nets, similar to the Los Angeles Clippers, are overcoming their big boy counterpart in a huge market that is New York. And Brooklyn's going to be fun.
Yeah, and they did it a different way. They didn't just get lucky and sign LeBron James like the Lakers. They worked for this. They had the culture. They had the player development. But I do have one more question for you guys in terms of the season. Do you guys think KD is going to play this year? Yes or no?
I think I said no on the buzz, so I'm going to say no on the outlet.
Quick question, Corey. Do you want to be the new co-host of the Buzz now? Because Jack got fired. I'm just kidding.
Yikes.
I'm leaning towards no, but given that report we read about the fact that the Achilles injury he suffered is not off his push-off foot, I'm more optimistic that he will be able to return this season. But even if he's able to return this season, I'm not so sure he should play, if that makes sense. But yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. I'm sorry, that's not a definitive answer.
Unacceptable. I'm going with yes here. And I think a little bit has been like over-exaggerated in terms of the recovery of an Achilles injury. Like we've seen multiple NFL players come back this year. And we talked about on the recent buzz, there was a player who came back that's over 300 pounds and he came back in a shorter period than it would be for KD to come back in March. And we know he's frail and that he's not the biggest body. And he's also like super obsessed with basketball. We see how far he is in his rehab. I'm just going to keep speaking it into existence that he's going to play this year. And I really do think we'll see him in March. I don't know what level we'll see him at, but I feel really confident, especially just the one comment he made that during that recent interview that Jack just mentioned, where he said, yeah, I'm not going to be ready for the beginning of the season. It kind of makes you feel like he's really trying to push to play this year. But obviously, that's for a Buzz episode.
What position does that, before we get to league pass ranking, what position does that NFL player play?
If you're over 300 pounds, you're playing offensive or defensive line.
And so in terms of like explosiveness and, you know, the amount of pressure and tension you put on your Achilles, is it similar to what a basketball player would with the Achilles? Because the Achilles is one of the worst injuries you can have and probably the worst injury you can have as a basketball player. So that's why for me, I lean towards no, because, you know, we're talking about the Brooklyn Nets here as well, Nick, and one of the most conservative sort of training staffs in the league. But, you know, if Kevin Durant says he's ready, then, you know, I think like you sort of said, he has to come back.
So I'm not sure if he plays offensive or defensive line. I would think at both positions, you're putting an extreme amount of pressure on your Achilles. If you're playing offensive line, people are trying to push you backwards. You're planting your back foot, taking excessive amount of weight, push towards you, land on top of you. And then if you're playing defensive line, you're trying to explode off the ball. But also Emmanuel Sanders, a wide receiver, it's important to be explosive if you're playing wide receiver. He's back. He wouldn't be out there if he couldn't explode off his leg. So it makes me feel more confident. Obviously, the football is a contact sport. The movements are a little bit different, but there is a lot of similarities there.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm confident, you know, but we'll see what happens. League pass-wise, where do you have the Nets?
13 out of 10.
I love it.
I have him as an 8 out of 10.
Oh, get off the show.
You have no co-hosts by the end. You're going to have like doing solo podcasts like it's Locked On Network for you, Nick.
That's better, though, than my normal. I mean, that's my, as ties my, I've given that 2 10s, 3 8s, and 3 7s, and a bunch of low ranks.
Oh, he's optimistic.
So we're doing pretty good. Come on.
We're doing okay, I guess. Well, you got to give them an extra boost because they have, like, arguably the best broadcasting team in the NBA.
They do have the best broadcast.
But this also goes into that League Pass situation where, for us, we're not really watching on League Pass because we have...
But that's how we get the amazing broadcast team.
I'm watching on League Pass, so, yeah, not all of us live in, you know, the United States of America.
Well, maybe you should fix that, Jack, you know?
Hire me, any, you know, teachers and, you know, workers and any media guys. You know, Brooklyn Nets Media Day, you know, Nick and I might pop down if we're given some credentials.
Jack, if I win the lotto, I'll hire you.
Yes.
So just send me lotto tickets for my birthday, Christmas, any holiday.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Pick up watching.
11 out of 10, you know, obviously for Kyrie right there. No, but really a 10 out of 10. Obviously, I'm going to watch every single Nets game. You know, a good amount of them I'll probably end up watching twice. But a TV show comparison for you guys. Now, Jack, I don't know if you know, this can be based off a watchability or a plot that's similar to the Nets, if that makes sense.
I like it. The Office, because it's the best show ever, I watch it every day. I watch it all the time. And I'm obsessed with it, just like I am with this glorious basketball team.
I'm saving the Office. I've already used The Office, didn't I? Yeah, I did it for the Clippers. Realizing that as I looked down at my note sheet that it was already used. But yeah, The Office is timeless, and I watch at least one or two episodes. It feels like not a day anymore because I've been a little bit busier, but it's, you put on any part of that show and you can get a laugh and find a laugh.
Yes, you can.
So my show is Entourage. I went with for the Nets. Entourage is in probably my top 10 favorite shows of all time. You know, there's glamour, there's fun, there's comedy, there's camaraderie, there's friendship, Entourage.
I'll approve. I think that's a good show. And like Bruce, you said with The Office, like any, you could watch any scene and like you can be sucked into that episode.
So is Turtle the, is Corey the Turtle of this podcast right now?
Oh my god.
Jerry Ferrero is doing pretty well for himself.
Isn't he the Knicks like gaming coach for the
league?
Yeah, I'm going to go with my current favorite show, and this is a show I watch excessively. That's Rick and Morty. Just like I can watch the Nets no matter what, I could watch Rick and Morty no matter what. Even if I've seen the episode, I could watch it multiple times, just like I'll do with Nets games. So there it is for me. Guys, any final thoughts or topics you want to cover before we get out of here?
I'm Johnny Drama Guy, I guess, because I'm the older guy, and, you know, I'm I'm kind of a wannabe, and but Johnny Drummond is also the funniest character on the show.
But you're I like to associate myself.
You're not that short. Come on, man. Yeah, we're taller than you, but you're not that short.
You guys are taller than me. I don't like standing next to you guys. I'm normally the tall person in my friend group. It makes me feel weird.
We'd make you play point if we were a 3-on-3 team.
Yeah, that ain't good. That ain't good. I'm at the ball handling. We're in trouble, boys.
Oh, shit. No. Guys, plug yourself. Tell them where they can find your work and find you on Twitter.
At the JManJBT, you know, doing the Brooklyn Buzz, JBT, and appearing regularly on the outlet. Find my, you know, work and video breakdowns as well and articles on OGGBasketball.com and NetsRepublic.com.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KWALHoops, K-W-A-L Hoops. I host Full Access Hoops podcast, which you can find pretty much daily. And we also have the Hire or Fire series, OGGBasketball.com. So check that out.
And I'll plug both of you guys. We're also running a top 50 right now, dropping 5 players per week right now. At the time of this recording, we are at 41. By the time this drops, we'll probably be at 31. So a big shout out to Corey and Jack for all they do for OTG, putting out great content on JBT and Full Access Hoops. And obviously, you can find the show on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and YouTube. Like I mentioned earlier, head to DesignTree/OffTheGlass, discount code OTG5, save yourself $5, grab some OTG merch.
So much content. Peace out, knuckleheads, Jack.